Hello again and welcome to another episode of Real Talk with RJ. If this is your first time listening, please don't forget to like and subscribe and follow so you know exactly when we release brand new episodes. Today we're going to be talking about something very special and close to my heart because the special guest that I have on the show today is also very close to my heart. Today, I'd like to welcome the world and introduce my mother, Verna. Hi, Mom.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. I know you got a lot of things to do. I just really want to thank you for taking the time to be on the show today.
I'm glad to be here.
So, you know, the reason why I wanted to call you is because, you know, you have experienced so much in your life, and you have shared so many of those stories with me, and I just noticed a very big difference, like a big gap between people who are claiming that they're victims of racism and people who actually were victims of racism. And it's just, I find it very interesting because of the fact that people are out there just say, oh, that was racist, but they really have no idea what real racism was, what real racial violence was, because they had never experienced that part of their life. So if you don't mind, what were some of the racist things that you had experienced growing up?
Okay, well, come to mind, there's two different ones. One of them was when I was in school, I went to a mixed school at first, and then my family took me to a school up in Fair Oaks, and it was an all-white school. And it was the first time I've ever been to an all-white school. When I went to the school, I thought my name was N-word. Because the fact is, that's what I was called for 4 months. I go into the cafeteria with all the students in there, and they would be talking until they see me come. And once I walked into the room, it was silent as a pin. And first thing they would do is look at me and stare at me. When I would try to sit down at a table, everyone would jump up and say, oh, the N's here, and would leave the table. And it was a very hard time of my life. I even have people that would come in my classroom that wasn't even their classroom, sit on my desk and call me the N-word, and a girl would throw orange juice on my desk, on my clothes every single day, until one day I had to stand up for myself and say no more. And the second time was when we lived in Fair Oaks also. We lived amongst the Klan, and they didn't have the white sheets or anything, but they were affiliated with them.
Let me stop you right there. For those of you guys who are listening who are unfamiliar with Fair Oaks is in Sacramento, California, in the United States. And it's also, she's also talking about the Klan, which is a very, very well-known white supremacist group called the Ku Klux Klan. People, a group or organization of white supremacists who are known for wearing white sheet type of outfits and white pointy hoods. Just for all those listeners who are outside of the United States listening right now. Go ahead, Mom.
Mm-hmm. And so when we lived there in Fair Oaks, my sister was getting her hair done one day with my mother, and somebody threw a cherry bomb at her house. The next morning, and we all jumped up, of course, to see what it was, and we saw that it was a cherry bomb that was supposed to start the house on fire, but it didn't start it on fire. And then the next morning, we had the gigantic cross on our lawn. So these are kind of things that we went through. This is during the time when George Wallace was running for president, and he's a well-known racist who did not like people of color. And so we, you know, I tolerated for a while, and I asked God one day, especially the one at school, I asked him, you know, what can I do? Because I was not going to get to the place where I was going to allow this hatred to hate me. I knew by heart that these people didn't know anything about me. All they know is what they see on TV. All they knew is what, you know, somebody told them that it was full of hate, but they didn't know me, the person. So God told me one day at school to pretend, you know, show them who I was. I was like a comedian. So I went into the cafeteria, but I came in a different attitude this time. And I looked and I had a big smile on my face. They didn't know what was going on. When I walked into the cafeteria, I looked at everybody and I said out loud, what table do I want to sit at today? And I looked around and all of them kept looking at me. And I finally went to a table and sit in the middle table, and the same thing, they jumped up and said, oh, here comes the end. But this time something different happened. People came from other tables and sit with me and got to know me. And that was the first one that I got to a chance where people started to find out who I really was. And before the school year was ended, everybody loved me, most of the people. There was a few, you always have a few that's gonna always hate you no matter what. You know, they're just embedded with hate in their heart, and that was okay. I kept on going on, but I did change a lot of hearts. Same when the one in Fair Oaks where the people there, you know, put a cross on our lawn, I got to know some of the children. Even one of the girls told me one time that we weren't Americans, that I was from Africa. And I tried to explain to her, I never came from Africa. My ancestors are from Africa, but I wasn't born in Africa. I'm an American. I'm a full-blown American. And it took time, you know, but once they got to know me, some of them, like I said, there's some that's never going to change. But some of them, I did change them because I was a better person. I wasn't the person they thought I was. I didn't act like they, you know, like they think Black people are supposed to act, you know, because a lot of us are decent people, but people don't see it except for the color of our skin. So those are the kind of things that I actually went through, and I grew up, and I also went through racism as far as jobs, because, you know, I hear all the time about people saying with jobs that, oh, go get a job, go get you a really good job. Well, I did get a good degree, you know, I had 2 AA degrees, and I was valedictorian in my school. But when I went out to get the jobs that I was going for, which was the legal assistant, I was going out for those kind of jobs. And as soon as they see my resume, they loved it. I had a really great resume. But once I walked into the door, it was a different story. They saw what I looked like, and all of a sudden they made excuses. So the job market also has it too. But as a whole, majority of the people that I've met in life have been good people, and they love me for who I am.
All right. Thank you for opening up about that, because I'm sure talking about those types of experiences is not easy to recount, especially when, you know, they don't always have the happy ending that your school experience had, where lots of people actually started to give you a chance to see you. I wanted to kind of touch on another thing as well. You said that you had a cross put on your front lawn, correct?
Correct.
And was it lit on fire like the traditional Klan crosses usually work?
Yes, it was. It was lit on fire, and then it went out, of course, but it was lit on fire. That's how they put it in there. They lit the cross on fire, and it was gigantic. It was probably, I would say, probably about 14 feet or more. It was big. It was a big old cross, but it was lit on our grass, and it looked like a big old cross. And so they had put it on fire, and then eventually went out.
Did they were they surrounding it outside your lawn, or did they just place it and walk away?
I don't know, because they did it when we're sleeping at night. Mm. So when we came out there, it was there. It was burning our lawn. So I think they probably just put it there and then walked away. They probably watched it from a distance, but they didn't watch it right on our lawn, because, you know, my father was in the house. So they waited till we went to sleep late at night, and then they put one, and we woke up in the morning, there it was.
And how did your father handle that situation?
Well, he was really upset at first, and then a lot of his friends heard about it, and we also at that time talked to all the news media, and we had people come out that were friends of my father. He knew people from the Black Panthers, he knew people from the Hells Angels. There was another group, I believe it was called the I can't remember the other group that was with them, but they all came out and they stood in front of our house, and they all wanted to.
That third group, was that the Latino group, the Brown Berets?
Yeah, Brown Berets. It was the Brown Berets, and they were there. And so they all came out, and I'm not sure who the Brown Berets were, but that's what they call themselves. And so they were all there, and they were trying to help my dad, and they wanted to take down all the people that hated us. And my father told them no. And I was one of the ones at 13 years old. I wanted them to go too, because I was really angry that these people were so mean to us and hated us. And my father said, no, if we do that, we're not any better than they are. And I was so angry about it until one day we got a letter from a lady sent a letter to our house. We had over 15,000 letters. And one of the letters was in a different color, I believe it was yellow. And my dad said it was addressed to the children. And he set us down, and it was from a lady who owned a ranch. And of course, right away, I wanted to go there because I love horses. But he said no. And so the lady read a letter to us, which changed my life forever. And the letter said, I'm a Caucasian lady. And of course, I didn't know what Caucasian meant. So my friends correct me, Caucasian lady. But I didn't know what it meant. And it meant like a white person. And she said, I know you children are probably hating white people right now because of what they're doing to you. And she said that one thing we should learn, if we don't learn anything else, is that there's apples in a barrel. Don't judge an apple by the color of the skin, but by the content of its character. And a little while later, Martin Luther King said the same exact thing. So that changed my life, to learn to look at people by their character and not the color of their skin. And that lady changed my life. Had she not, I would have been prejudiced just like other people and not like white people too. But because of her saying that, that changed my life to look at other people in a different way.
That's powerful, because you had every reason, you know, justified or not justified, just the circumstances under which you were growing up, you had every reason to grow up prejudiced. But this one incident actually really changed your path from being prejudiced to being a neutral when it comes down to something like that. And I would even argue to say that racism is not something that's, you know, a natural, like if you put a group of people together, like when you see kids playing, when kids are playing with each other, they don't care about the color of their skin. It's when they start growing up and they're taught that the color of their skin matters. That's when the prejudice starts. That's when being different's not okay, because they want to follow a mommy and daddy's footsteps when they're so influential at such a young age. But when the kids playing on the playground, kids don't care about that. Kids don't look on color or skin or religious differences. They might look at the way a person dresses. Like if a person has, you know, like Muslim religious dress, then the kids would be like, hey, that's different. What does that mean? But they're not going to ask with the sense of, oh, you look stupid with that. They're going to be like, oh, why do you wear that around your head? Meaning like a hijab. You know, the Muslim modest garment that the Muslim women wear around to cover the side of their face and their hair and their neck. You know, like little kids that see that on a young girl, they're not going to walk up and go, oh, you look stupid. They're going to be like, oh, what does that mean? Why do you wear that? Is it hot? They're going to ask innocent questions.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of these prejudiced parents that teach them this prejudice mentality that they tend to adopt because they believe that this is right and wrong. And very often when parents are teaching prejudice theologies, if you will, they teach them that they are superior to the other people they're putting down. And that's why kids feel like, oh, I'm stronger, I'm better than this race because, you know, this race does X, Y, Z, or they're all like this. So when you were growing up and in school, and you were going to this all-white school in Fair Oaks, did you have any teachers that actually were rooting for you, like were encouraging you, and did you have any bad experiences with teachers as well?
Yes, my teachers were very good. I didn't have any problems with the teachers. I did in Oroville one teacher, but as a whole, most of my teachers were very supportive. In fact, the teacher that was in my Spanish class was the guy that came on my desk to sit down and call me the N-word. She would sit there and just look at me, and I couldn't figure out why she looked at me and wouldn't stop the kid from bothering me. And it took one day where the boy, I was really upset about something, I don't remember what it was. And the boy was come my room, the girl with the orange juice was throwing the orange juice in my back. I just got to the point one day that I just had enough. And so I did get in the girl's face and tell her, she threw that orange juice one more time, there was gonna be a problem. And then the boy, when I went into my classroom and sat down, the boy came on my desk and I actually slapped him so hard that I just got tired of him saying, calling me that name. And I slapped him really hard on both cheeks because he said it again after I slapped him the first time. Second time I slapped him so hard that was the end of it. He didn't say it anymore and the girl didn't throw orange juice on my back anymore. And the teacher was sitting there and I thought, oh, I'm in trouble. But instead she was clapping. She said, about time, Verna. She said, it was about time. And I kind of looked at her funny and I'm like, why is she saying that? She goes, I could have stopped them any time from bothering you. She goes, but they would always bother you on the outside, and they would always bother you everywhere you went. She says, but now they won't bother you because you stood up for yourself. And I learned a valuable lesson. It was okay to stand up for myself. Not always okay to hit somebody or do that, which is not something I would normally done. But it was just that it got to the point where they just wouldn't leave me alone. And I had to do something to let them know, hey, this is not tolerated anymore. And once I did that, they didn't bother me anymore. They still didn't like me, but they didn't bother me. They left me alone. And they didn't call me the N-word anymore. I didn't hear that word anymore after a while, you know, after that first incident from the school, from the cafeteria and them. And it's like people just left me alone, you know, and didn't bother me anymore. But we did have a class that talked about that, that I went to in college. And I wish everybody would go to this kind of class. There was two things we have. We have a thing called the Belong Circle. And we also, and I can't remember what the class was in college, but the class had every culture there, of every culture. And we were able to sit down together and talk about our differences. And it was the most educated class there was. And people that came in there that were prejudiced were not prejudiced anymore, because they were able to get out what they felt. We were able to get out what we felt. And the thing about it is, what I learned from it was that everybody has problems. Everybody struggles with racism one way or the other. And that was the thing that really hit me, especially in the Belong Circle. It showed me that people of Latino, they go through struggles just like Black people do. People that are white go through struggles just like Black people do. We do it all in a different kind of levels. But everybody's struggling one way or the other from prejudice. And I was like, wow, you know, transgender, whatever it is, everybody struggles with something that's of hate. And hate is just a thing that it's really a man-made thing. It's something that men do because they want to feel better than somebody else. So they hate somebody that they think is lower than them. And really, they're not. They're really hating themselves. But they want to act like they're hating other people to make themselves look better. So that's what I learned from the Belong Circle.
I agree. I agree strongly on that. And I believe that hate comes from ignorance. I believe it, like, ignorance is one choice, because, you know, people choose to be ignorant. Because, I mean, at least when a person is introduced to a situation, there may be ignorance to that because it's unexpected. They don't know anything about it. But the ignorance after that point is a choice, because they either can learn about that situation and research it and learn as much as they can about it to be better mm-hmm. suited and better acquainted with it, or they can continue to be comfortable with that level of ignorance and do nothing about it. So, like, for example, like if you're walking into your garage and then somebody just jumps up, or like, let's say I jump up out of a trash can with a mask on and I go, boo, you're going to immediately be afraid. You're, you know, either fight or flight, you'll either run or you'll punch me and, you know, yell or do something aggressive to defend yourself against this scary event that just happened. And the reason why you're scared is because you don't know who's making this sound that you did not expect. You don't know who this person is that you didn't know was there. So that mm-hmm. is all the result of ignorance, which results in fear. But if I'm walking in that same mask, I go, hi, mom, and I put on that mask and I walk up and I go, boo, it's not going to scare you because there's no fear, because you know who it is and you're expecting it. So fear is a natural response to ignorance, as well as frustration and anger when someone you love is hurting and suffering, and you get frustrated because you can't do anything to stop them from suffering. Another object is when you don't understand somebody and all you can see is the stereotype behind that person. Or, like, for example, like, there are people out there who look at members of the Latino culture who listen to banda music, which a lot of people will say, oh, that's like, it sounds like a merry-go-round, or I can't stand hearing that music, that dun 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 dun. I can't stand it. I hate it. But would they really feel like that if they actually could understand the lyrics? Because some of the rhythms may be annoying, but if you listen to the lyrics, you're like, that was a very beautiful song. And everybody out there having parties enjoys playing their music loudly so they can have and enjoy a party. I don't think anybody's out there like having a party and blasting jazz anymore. That's just not something that you really do anymore. Everybody's playing their, you know, their Earth, Wind & Fire or Tupac or or Vicente Fernandez, the Mexican singer who's like the Latino Elvis. You know, there's all these different genres of music, and they mean something to somebody because music is something that unites. Regardless of the language you speak, you can get people together who have no idea how to communicate with each other, but you get them, you give them instruments, and they're all fanatics of music. They will come together with a tune that just nicely melds together. And I love how you were talking about how everybody has problems. Everybody suffers. There are stereotypes in every culture, every race. But nobody wants to eat a taco with nothing on it but meat. Nobody wants to eat just a meat that has no flavor. Everybody wants to eat food that has a little bit of spices and herbs, maybe some salt or sugar, whatever it is you're eating. Everyone wants to eat something with flavor. And if we really think about it, every different culture out there, every different religion out there, that all adds different flavors to the beauty of Earth. If everybody was so happy, like, because look at the travelers in the world. The travelers want to go to other countries. They want to see other places. They don't want to just sit there and grow up in their small town. They want to see the big world out there. Because if everybody had the same facial features, if everybody had the same skin color, what's the point of traveling? You're going to see the same stuff there as you would here. And everybody wants to see the beauty that they don't get to see every day. And I absolutely love that. Because I think that people are missing the fact. People are so, like, they're looking at the stereotypes and thinking that the stereotype is 100% everyone they encounter. But stereotypes are small portions or sometimes large portions of people, but they are not everybody. And another thing is that so many people these days are so quick to pull the race card, saying, they're discriminating me against, or they're discriminating against me because of this, or because of the color of my skin, or because of this, or that's racist. And they're completely ignoring the fact that they had been doing something that demanded that type of attention. When they walk up and they start threatening to beat everybody up if anyone messes with them, and then the cops get called on them, and they're like, oh, they're taking me out because of the color of my skin. Like, no, they're arresting you because you decided that you wanted to go out and be stupid, and you wanted to make a big fuss and then cause all these problems. So you're disrupting my customers. Yeah, we're calling the police on you. So they have this figment of their imagination of what racism is, and you actually are describing some real legitimate racism. And, you know, speaking of which, we have this big focus on police officers right now because of the unfortunate murder of George Floyd. You know, I you told me two experiences, one with your brother, with your brother in the police department, and you have a good friend, or you have a couple of good friends who are police officers. Can you briefly share those two experiences?
Yeah, my brother, of course, he was killed by police. Also, they said that he'd done something before that. They got him in the alley and they shot him because they thought that, you know, something about raping a woman or something like that. It's been a while. I don't remember exactly the whole detail, but something to do with he was supposed to have raped a young lady in apartments close in our area, and tie up her little daughter and stuff. It was in the papers like that. And in fact, we didn't even hear about it until they had our brother on the ground dead, and we heard it on the news. They didn't even come to our family and tell us. We found it on the news. And the police riddled my brother like they would Bonnie and Clyde. We went to the morgue. I felt his body, and his holes were everywhere. And the police that I've known down through the years, I wanted to be a police officer at one time, studied to be one, and wanted to change the world. But then, of course, I've got married to a man that did not want me to be a police officer and, you know, gave me a hard time about it. But eventually just said, no, I'm going to stay home and raise my children instead. And so, you know, I've seen in both worlds, that I've seen police officers that are bad police officers, and I've seen very good police officers. You know, just like if anybody else in life, again, is judging them by their character, not by what they are. And that is the key point that I've seen the good ones. There's some very good officers out there. I've had no problems with them when they come to me and talk to me. As long as I'm respectful to them, I've been compliant to them and do what they ask me to do. You know, if they yell at me, I can always turn it around. I'm just saying, well, sir, I didn't know, and I'm very polite about it. And I look them in the eye. You know, I call it the puppy love. I look them in the eyes with the puppy love and say, you know, sir, I didn't know, or whatever, and it calms them down a little bit. You know, because a lot of times, too, I've noticed that police officers, when they do go after the bad guys, that's the same thing. They stereotype us and think we're all the same. And so they come out at us that way at first. But if we change our tune of how we do things sometimes, be the better person, it usually changes them around. Usually gets them to be nicer. Now, they're not all of them are that way. There are some that no matter what you do or say, they're just mean, you know. But a lot of times they just got in the police department to be like that. But majority of the ones I've run into have been very good officers. Even the ones where the officers, you know, that killed my brother, they were the sheriff department. And for the longest time, I did not like the sheriff at all. I did not like anything about them because they killed my brother. And evidence showed later on that a lot of stuff that they said was not all true, you know, about my brother. So I had it in with them. But then I've met really nice sheriffs. You know, I've met some really good ones that really are there to help the people, really there to try to, you know, they don't have that prejudice attitude, because a lot of them at that time did. And a lot of them now don't have that. They've changed. And so there are good of everything, you know, no matter what it is in life, good police, sheriff, highway patrol, doesn't matter. And there's some bad ones too out there that are bad apples, you know. And so that's where the difference is to me.
And, you know, I think that's such a great point to close on as well, because ultimately, racism is a result of deliberate ignorance. There are good and there are bad in every race, in every culture, in every religion. Just because somebody has a priest collar or a religious covering in their head or a religious symbol does not mean that that person is actually a good example of what it is they believe. And just because a person has a certain color of skin or a certain ethnicity or a certain nationality does not mean that they are the stereotype of that country, that race, that culture, that religion, etc. Everyone deserves a fair chance. Everybody deserves to be seen for who they are. And it's important to not stereotype or classify anybody as something negative until you have enough information based on facts that shows that this person is in fact that category. But like, if we classify every cop as a bad cop, why are we going to get offended when people keep classifying us as the bad part of our ethnic community? We're doing the exact same thing. And it's like, it's unfair for us to be mad when people call us stereotypical names, racial slurs, and then we go around and call them slave owners because they happen to be white, or say that they're the ones who promulgated slavery or made their money on slavery, whatever the case may be, just because of the color of their skin. Mm-hmm. No white people alive today in America were responsible for slavery. All the slave owners of the history are dead. They passed on. So I'm just saying, like, it's important, like you were saying, and like the letter you heard when you were a kid, it's important for everybody to do what Dr. Martin Luther King said and judge every person by the content of their character and not by the color of the skin. Thank you so much, Mom, for taking the time to come on my show today. It's definitely a pleasure to hear from you. And guys, we always talk. We talk often, and I'm grateful for that in our relationship. And I'm grateful that you would even want to be on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really honored. Feel really honored. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. And thank you all out there for listening once again. And please just remember, even if you were taught that being racism is okay, reteach yourself. Learn that everybody has an opportunity. Everybody is a spice, a beautiful addition to the world, if you're willing to seek it out. There are cultural practices that could possibly make your life better, and they're not even your culture. You can learn so much from other people who are able to see the world differently than you can. So I encourage you, focus on the heart, not the skin, and you'll see how much more peace you feel as you live your life in a world filled with wonders. Thank you so much for spending time once again on Real Talk with RJ, signing out.